WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into the winter season. It remains to be seen whether I get to Radio Row and Super Bowl coverage from Los Angeles and the new stadium and la la and all that. But we're trying to get there. But between here and there, we're going to sit and watch some football. I'm going down to the casino this weekend to wear my mask and see what's going on. And we're going to get back out to the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. And I promised this guy crab cake. At some point, I'm going to get him out. Maybe he'll be Nacho Mama's next month. I'm not sure. But he was on the show 2 weeks ago, and we talked about all of this business stuff and sports stuff and off-season stuff. And we wondered aloud what the Orioles were going to be doing in lease, and because we always wonder that. He is the one-time executive for the Baltimore Orioles and Texas Rangers in Major League Baseball and all sorts of things. He is the good professor at Georgetown. Marty, had I known that the Angelos boys were going to be dropping the – oh, we're going to be renovating the inside of the stadium slightly and just sort of drop it on a Friday afternoon. I mean, they have all that, all their tricks down. But the interesting thing is over the weekend, during a football weekend, a snowstorm and all of that, everybody I knew was talking about the left field wall at Camden Yards like they had season tickets in Section 74 or something, right? But it really did become something that was talked about on my timeline. You got very vociferous. And I like Mueller hit me early on, and I said something flippant, like there's nothing special about Camden Yards. Nothing special's happened there to warrant, like, other than Ripken, not a lot, Delman Young, not a lot's happened there that they altering the sight lines or something anybody's even going to notice. He took umbrage with that. But then people like you and Janet Marie Smith and other people I know that were involved in building it were all like, you're doing what to where and why and how. So I wanted to give you and jump back 2 weeks later and, how you doing, Marty?
Yeah, no, I'm good. I'm glad that you caught that. Because I think what you just accurately described there between your reaction, Don Mueller's reaction, public reaction, look, it's 30 years since the ballpark opened, and it from a playing standpoint, right? We haven't touched it. If you look at the outfield, center field, party area, some other things on the roof, on the deck in right field, you know, some of the other things in premium seating areas, they have been addressed. Actually, they were addressed about 10 years or so ago when there was a ability to use some public funds and some private funds together to do that. We had the statues in left field. And I think the sense was, if I'm getting this accurate, I think the sense with those changes, the party deck, the six statues, some of those other things, those were additive, two things. They were additive to the ballpark, to the experience for fans, right, for sure. And number two, they were an attempt to further open the ballpark towards Camden Street, looking up Utah Street, and all of that to have a better front porch.
But once the hotel was there kind of screwing up the vista, as Dave Ginsberg brought up, that made it more important that the inside of it was more, and sports legends falling apart and Angelo's putting them out of business. And the fact that Jeppy had the second floor and that one, like the experiential part of what they have in Philly, and you know, the bars across the street were always part of that. But I would agree with that trying to find more reasons to come to the ballpark when the team ain't winning.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So I think that's what that was, but yet there were also some things, you know, they took some seats out, they made some seats, they put some padded seats in, you know, they did some different things to restructure the ballpark, not just from a financial standpoint, but from an experience standpoint. Now you juxtapose that to this, which was purely for playing purposes, it seems. And number two, it wasn't in the context of anything else, right? There wasn't a pool of money that they had earned out from, you know, admission taxes and other things like that, that they were putting to use there. So that is what I think.
What does that mean? People. What does that mean, pulled out? Explain that for the audience here.
So
I'm trying to
year,
understand that they brought in a whole hell of a lot less revenue in every way, right? Other than maybe the bottom line off their television deal. But when it comes to taxes, hotels, selling widgets, they've done less of that by exponential numbers in recent years, especially with the plague.
Well, the first 15 years was over the top, 20 years over the top, right? Paid for itself. I mean, we can go back through and do a whole show on how the ballpark is more than paid for itself in terms of that. There were a lot of economists who didn't think this was going to do this, that, or the other thing. But in terms of admission taxes and other things like that, and rent, it has generated a substantial amount of dollars and paid that debt service, and now they can move on. And so in that lease, there is a certain amount of that money that's collected for rent and admission taxes and other things that goes into a capital, what's called a capital improvement fund. And at the 20-year mark, that's when that money was deployed from a capital improvement standpoint. And the team had to put some money in themselves to do it. Not unlike what the Ravens do, even though they don't pay rent at M&T, they put a substantial amount of money of their own into that. So the Orioles have done some of that, but the plant and the facility and the games generated a good deal of that. That's why they could do the roof deck. That's why they could do some of the other things. I think the Orioles themselves and Peter Angelos paid for the statues, from my understanding. So there was a mix of that. This comes from just analytics, the decision to do this. Also, please keep in mind that to make a structural change to the ballpark takes Major League Baseball approval, and that's not done in months. That's done typically in years, at least a year. So
you think this has been quietly in the works for a long time?
Yes, at least a year, maybe longer, because Major League Baseball tends to move glacially when it comes to things like this. They really want to see why you're doing it. There's a safety question.
So you think maybe this came in off the boat with Elias as to, hey, John, you want to make us better? Let's fix left field. John starts putting that in before the plague, during the plague. I mean, other owners voted on this.
Well, the owners don't necessarily have to vote on it. Baseball, the commissioner's office, MLB has to approve it. I'm sure the executive committee of owners. So I don't think this is not something that goes to the entire ownership group. But Major League Baseball has. Frank Robinson used to head this group, you know, the playing committee and all that. Joe Torre has headed that group in the past to do that, to look over playing conditions in that regard. So that's where this goes. And like I said, knowing a little bit about this takes months and months and months and probably at least a year to do it.
And there's no way to go rogue. Tell me that, right? Because we're in an era where rogue happens, right?
No, you wouldn't be playing home games if you unilaterally wanted to decide to change your dimensions in the ballpark. I'm not even sure, but perhaps maybe the Players Association may have some ability to at least weigh in on this as well. So,
man, it speaks volumes that there was no leak on this to anybody. That nobody cares. You know, the real reporters, Jerry Sandusky and the TV guys, and, you know, that used to be a point, the Jeff Barkers, somebody along the line 6 months ago would have gotten wind. Hey, Orioles are thinking about moving the fence back and honestly, having a public debate about it on WBAL and getting me worked up and being informational as you would have been 30 years ago, you and Lucchino would have been out in front of this, sent Jana Marie and she'd have smiled and winked at me and waved and told me some structural things and architecture and told me why it's a good idea. They're not about selling it. You know what I mean? If this has been going on this long, they could have had some idea to, I don't want to say monetize it, but at least express it in some other way than is Zoom with their general manager, who somehow Don Mueller thinks runs the franchise, which is hilarious that they've got smart people thinking that Mike Elias is Dick Cass. It's insane to me that they've kept their ownership and who makes these decisions. Then they make these huge decisions, in regard to what they're going to do. And we don't even know, like, you're telling me, I'm learning in the last 10 minutes with you, Marty Conway, that it was more complex than I even realized. Cause like, I hadn't thought of any of this until you sort of brought up how long this is in a pipeline, but they have no friends in the media here. They have no concept of how to do this. And why are they digging in January? Why weren't they digging in like October? Like, you know what I mean? Like what?
Yeah. Yeah. That part, maybe this permission came, you know, later than expected. Maybe there's a reason why, but it's going to give them less time to do it for sure. And then if you run into, weather delays or, you know, something else, but I'm sure they'll get this done.
It looks haphazard. You would agree from a fan's, it looks haphazard. You say it's not right at all.
I don't say that. I'm saying the decision process is a long time. Now, when you get to actually, I think what they've done, which is, look, this is, I go back to, you know, you've talked about it more than 30 years ago now, 35 years from the time the ballpark was being concepted in the late 80s, by the time it was actually opened in 1992, there was enormous, I mean, go back and read George Will's New York Times editorial about the ballpark that forever changed baseball and the biggest change of baseball since Jackie Robinson and a number of things like that. There was so much input, so much robust discussion, so many points of view were brought in, so many different elements of other historical perspectives, not just other ballparks, but Baltimore itself, on what all these elements of the ballpark would be. Yeah, you could listen to Janet Marie Smith and a handful of other people, Herb Belgrad and others, had gone down the line and talked about all those different things. This is not that, right? This is, you've built the house, you've had, you know, a world-class architect build your house. It's enormous, it's beautiful, and you want to put a utility room in the back. And you say, okay, I don't care. I want
I'm from Dundalk, Marty. You mean a clothesline.
A clothesline, yeah. So I want it to be, you know, 23 feet long and 8 feet wide. And in terms of what's on it, don't care. Just I need more space and I'm going to do that. That's what this comes off as. So when you say, why wasn't it leaked? Why wasn't there any discussion? There would have been enormous pushback had it been just brought up as a changing of the dimensions, right? Now, had it been part of something else, and this is where I was going to get to, if you look at what happened in Fenway Park when they had Lucchino and Janet Marie and others were there, there was years of discussion about replacing Fenway, and there was enormous pushback. Can't do it, whatever. It was a low revenue place, 33,000 seats. So they did a really ingenious and creative, Charles Steinberg, former Orioles PR person, was there. They did an ingenious renovation, and they capped it off at the top of what they now call the Green Monster seats, that section on top of the Green Monster, right? It's almost like Wrigley Field, where people were able to sit outside Wrigley Field and look in.
I sat up there during the 30-30 tour with Sean DeShilling, and it's an amazing view. It's, you know what I mean? It looks cool on TV, but the view from up there, yeah. If you love baseball, I mean, they created something out of nothing, right? To your point,
They took some of the, not only to create something out of nothing, they took what would have been some of the worst seats and turned them into some of the most desirable seats, right? From that perspective, I want to go to the ballpark and I want to sit there. I don't want to sit behind home plate and do all that. So now when you look at what we've seen so far in terms of renditions, you know, they're going to go back 23 feet. That's going to take out 10 or 12 rows. It's going to leave a few rows in that lower section, which, by the way, was popular for pregame. Kids were out there getting home run balls and batting practice on a regular basis. People love to sit there, grab a home run ball, throw it back. I mean, there was a whole culture, almost like the bleachers, that were part of that. Now, again, it looks like, okay, we're going to take the wall up from 7.5 feet roughly or something like that up to 12 feet. We're going to add another 5 or 6 feet to the wall. So you're not going to be able to scale that wall, bring home runs back, do some different things like that. And then the second part is where it ends. So it goes back sharply from 333, goes back sharply and then runs perpendicular to the field. And then there's a wall right where the, you know, they couldn't do anything at this point about the bullpen. And so you have a wall that is,
it's a Fenway wall kind of
field of play. Yeah. Well, it's
a Fenway right field.
If you're
going
to hit a triple, yeah, if you're going to hit it properly, it's probably going to run. You might see an inside the park home run if the ball hits perfectly there and then runs along the wall. But having said that, there were probably so many ways to angle that, to bring it in congruence with the bullpen, or to make some other changes to push things around a little bit. So point being is, it doesn't look like there's going to be any aesthetics to that. I don't know, maybe there's going to be seats on top of that, but there were a number of ways that they probably could have taken that left field and made it more visually appealing to people and created a story or stories out of it. But right now the story is, we're going back 23 feet because we've had more home runs in this ballpark than any other ballpark for the last dozen or more years. And we want to do that. Now, I heard Dan O'Dowd, former, you know, Orioles executive, former GM in Cleveland and Colorado, talk about this on MLB Network. And he cautioned about the unintended consequences, right? So you go back, you push it 23 feet, you think there'll be fewer home runs. But bottom line is, your team plays their 81 games. Everybody
it's going to cut 100 for home runs off of Adley Rutschman's career.
So
right?
I don't know if it's going to be, you know, Ryan Mountcastle or who it's going to be. But that's going to be an issue, right? Because you play there more than anything else. So, look, I get the whole concept. For a long time, I've understood that it's been hard to get free agent pitchers to come there because of that size. And all that. But
by the way, I think that's a ruse, by the way, because I think if you paid them, they would come. We'll never know because they were never willing to pay them anyway. That was my first split. Yeah. That's when I got flippant because I saw you like all ornery about it early on Friday when, I mean, first off, it's a Friday news dump. Apparently other people knew about it. Nobody said anything about it. We have no idea who designed, like I don't know anything about this. And Elias, those guys lie anyway. I don't want to hear from him. I don't want to hear from a baseball general manager about your redesign of your facility. It's insane. It doesn't make any sense. Especially when the owner's out to sea and the sport's locked out and there's no names on their websites and I can't buy a ticket. Like it's all of it's weird, but they have no sense of PR about them at all to get on the front of this to make it, even if it's unpalatable. But how about people that had season tickets out there that their tickets are now left a flyout, essentially, right? And I remember how people got, you know this, you work for the team, you were the one taking the phone calls from pissed off people that said, I was in section 41, row 13, behind home plate. You got me down at first base in row 28. Mr. Angelos' bunkies are in my seats, or Eli Jacobs' buddies are in my seats. Man, that was the beginning of my radio career, 92 and 93. Yeah. That's all I heard.
Yeah. I did think that, because again, back to my original thesis that this typically when you do something like this as part of a larger story, there's a renovation to the park. There's some other things that are going on that are part of it. And the playing dimensions can be, you know, you're putting in a waterfall in California, you're doing other things like that. So that's what was going through my head as to why that wasn't a part of it. But yeah, look, right now also, perhaps there's a fear of putting anybody connected to the ownership or the otherwise out front while they're in lockout. They don't want to have to answer any questions or even be broached on questions about on that. Don't know. But having said that, typically these stories, look, this ballpark is an important part of certainly Baltimore tradition and certainly Major League Baseball tradition. I happen to think I'm of the opinion that every move that you make with this park, whether it's just like Wrigley or Fenway or whatever it is, every move that you make with this park needs to be done with real care and understand the consequence of it to know, because look, over 30 years, people have invested their emotions in this ballpark. And yeah, the team hasn't always performed in many cases the way they want to, but people still look, when they became better after a decade, almost and a half of irrelevance, suddenly they were on the scene in 2012, 2014, 2016, people start showing up again. Like there's no question that they've lost the fans that are gone. But I've always said, it's like Bermuda grass in the winter. They go dormant, right? They're there, but they have to be brought out. Now some decide not to, and they die off or other things like that. And you got to create new fans. But the point here is, I think it seems to me, you know, it's like changing something on a city block when you could have put a lot of ornamentation to it and other things. And instead you just you know, you put a roundabout instead of a traffic light, and you said, that's what we're doing. And here's the analytics behind, you know, why we're doing it. And this ballpark, Oriole Park at Camden Yards, is way more than analytics. Promise me that, you know, if you look at Utah Street and you look at a lot of other things, the last thing that Oriole Park was about was analytics. It was about a throwback to a time when baseball fit in the block downtown, and there was a real reason why and everything that sprung up around it. This seems to be a shortcut. And the intended consequence is to have fewer home runs. I don't know what the unintended consequence is. We'll see how that plays out.
Why is fewer home runs so attractive to these people? Like, and we can't get any pitchers. We wouldn't pay them anyway. Our pitchers get their feelings hurt. Our pitchers don't want to compete against the Yankees and the Red Sox. And they had a chance to get out of the division to begin with. They could have gone to the National League back when all of this happened. So, like, you can't have it every way, right? I mean, and that's the incongruency of the whole thing. You know, that's the riddle of all of this is you and I get together and say, where does it end? But I can imagine for those of you who are involved in building it, it's like, I'm leaving my condo. I built it. It's beautiful. The next person that comes in, if they put the white granite in and pull my black out, I don't know that I really want to see it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Because a piece of your soul is a part of it. So you are more attached, and Larry and Janet Marie and Charles and Rick Vaughn and the people that I know that were a part of Oriole baseball 30 years ago. Now, the question is, not what they've done to deconstruct it. It's like, what's left to burn down. You know what I mean? They've done everything they can do to the franchise. Now let's F up the ballpark and tell people that this is going to help us win, because the nerds from Yale that came in, that cheated in Houston, are now running construction in the ballpark. And let's just pass it on to the taxpayers. Like, there's all of that. And then there's, okay, so you guys win. You're smarter than me. Finally. When's the parade, fellas? Tell me how this is helping them. I mean, that's the part that am I more inclined to go to a game with a bunch of friggin' flyouts to left field? They're talking triples and doubles. And I said to Luke, yeah, sure, there'll be a lot more triples, like 6 or 8 a year. Like, you're gonna take out 50 home runs. You're gonna take out 10 home runs from your 2 or 3 top right-handed batters. You're definitely gonna take away. Chris Davis would have lost 8 home runs a year going the other way in Camden Yards, because 364 wouldn't be a home run. It'd just be a flyout. It wouldn't have been a double or a triple or let's make it exciting. It just would have been a crappy flyout. And then I think about the plays where – and look, I don't watch them anymore. Brady flying over the wall. Devereaux flying over the wall. Johnny Oates running out of the shower soaking wet telling me why Brady played left field, because it was the bigger field already. It was already thought that left field was the bigger field, that center field was – you know, you could get by with a center fielder that had less of an arm. Same thing in right field where the porch was there. Like, it played like Camden Yards. The reason you're giving up more home runs is because you're paying your pitchers nothing, and they're double-A pitchers, and you're playing against Aaron Judge. So you're trying to penalize Aaron Judge. I think Aaron Judge would hit it out of Yellowstone Park against the pitching they've had here. And I think if they had Yellowstone Park or Jurassic Park and they were trying to sign Roger Clemens, he wouldn't say, ooh, I'm not going to pitch at Camden Yards. He would say, what are you paying me? What are you paying me? I pitched at Fenway. I can pitch anywhere. You know, I'll pitch at the Under Armour facility down on Fort Avenue. Like, if you pay them, they come. They've never been willing to pay them. Or if they grow them, then they don't want to pay them. This is really about shitty ownership. This isn't about the ballpark. I mean, this isn't about – literally, that's what this is about for me witnessing it. And this saying, this is another one of their harebrained schemes. At least, you know, it's not coming from the old man. I mean, this has got to be John or Lou, right? Or Brady Anderson or whoever's in their ear, Mike Elias, whoever the flavor of the month is. But I would say, where are we in 5 years? How does this make my experience as a fan better, seeing more flyouts and a couple of triples? How does this make your baseball team better? And when the rubber meets the road and Grayson Rodriguez gets helped by this in some way and he's great, then you got to go pay him. Are you going to do that? And that's really where it's at for me. Really.
Well, back to my reference about Dan O'Dowd and the unintended consequences, you know, Dan O'Dowd was the general manager in Colorado, and there was no bigger home run park than playing at a Mile High. So a lot of the things about home runs, let's keep in mind, yes, dimensions, Yes, bigger, stronger, faster players. But keep in mind, a lot of the debate about home runs has gone to the ball, how high the seams were on the ball, when they were not high on the ball. There's been a number of things related to home runs and the increase in home runs and the increase in strikeouts. So I don't know that dimensions always explain, I'm sure they don't explain 100% of the rise of home runs. It's also less of a penalty, less of a consequence for strikeouts. And so if you hit 45 home runs, but you strike out 165 times, you can still get a $30 million a year contract.
Or what we call here a Reggie Jackson or a Dave King.
Yeah, so it sort of doesn't matter. Thomas. So point being is whatever those dimensions were, I'm sure, look, over 30 years, things do change. But not to have a intellectual discussion included about theoretically why home runs happen in certain places, you know, I get it. I would just say, look, whatever seats they took out, save them, and maybe they could be put back. That's all I'll say at that point.
You don't think they'll be up on Hunt auctions in 30 days with a Brooks Robinson signature on them or something? He is Marty Conway. He's the good professor at Georgetown University. I think I left that out at the beginning. You should be following him on LinkedIn and Twitter and places that he opines about all this stuff. Just on a personal, this bothered you, right? I mean, like, I could tell. I get your animus in general things, and you're a pretty mild-mannered cat when you are, unlike myself, who wears it out on my sleeve. I felt like you were crying out to come on the show and give your side of the story. And more than that, your side of the story is not just an intelligent, wise part of this, but a historical part of this that – people need to hear this, because there's plenty of these 20-somethings running around that weren't down there when Sutcliffe, you know, pitched the first game and Bill Murray was running around and having a good time. And like some of the stories I've been telling around here, we are in a different era and they're trying to do different things and appeal to different people. But this feels like, and I've used the word, and I'll probably find a synonym for this when I get my Roger's thesaurus out in my new home, gimmick. I call this, it's just like a gimmick to me.
Well, when I looked at it, again, part of my reaction probably had a lot to do with it has always been my understanding, because I experienced it, even to make small suggestions 33 years ago, there was just a bigger picture that we had to think about. And when I looked at this and I said, what's the bigger picture? Why is this better for fans? Where does this become better for the ballpark and the aesthetics? Because I like to see that overhead shot that everybody refers to on, you know, in 1992. And everything looks perfect. The ballpark looks perfect. The warehouse looks perfect. The players on the field, everything looks perfect. And now you're going to say, well, but there's going to be a bigger gap in left field. And that's just because we don't want as many home runs as we have. I think in the modern day ballpark design, there was an expectation that there would be more to this, right? Now, again, I'm going to pause and wait to see what the new seating looks like around that space. Maybe there's something creative that they're going to do. Maybe there's going to be some sort of platform or deck that's going to be in a position to give people a really interesting experience. Because look,
the old bullpen in Comiskey Park is what you're thinking, right?
Well, I'm saying that there's about 30 rows of seats there, roughly. And I think they're going to take out about 23 or some number in that.
Maybe they can bring in a Clevelander with a pool. I did that in Miami.
Well, there's going to be 6 or 7 rows or some rows of seats potentially. And what is that going to be? Just regular seats? Or is it going to be, because if you go back there, you could push all the way back to the terrace box seats, which aren't that valuable out there, frankly. I know that.
Well, that would make it more like Memorial Stadium in that field, because that's where I sat in Memorial Stadium, section 11.
And then you could have flat walkways in there. People could walk in and walk out. It could be part of that. Again, I don't get paid by them anymore. I don't get paid for that experience. But that then becomes something that is holistic as a reason why you are – look, the Ravens have publicly said they're thinking about already, and they're far ahead. They don't – this isn't even lease-oriented – about opening up the southern end of M&T Stadium to better face what's going to go on, already at Horseshoe, Topgolf, whatever else is coming in there. So holistically, they're thinking about how do we open the stadium on that end, like they have on the north end, to be more fan friendly, consumer friendly, commercial friendly, et cetera. So that's long-term thinking. I think, frankly, that's influenced by Oriole Park at Camden Yards and how it got there. And so they're going to take a very traditional, typical football stadium, which doesn't usually come with a lot of bells and whistles and feel, you know, any feeling about it, to say we're going to do that. That's what I think is missing so far. I'm open to hear more about left field that then becomes more a part of what is the longer term plan for that space. Because yes, you're displacing people, but you're also creating an opportunity for new fans to experience something. And what is that going to be? So I will, you know, park myself at this point. But yes, I was surprised to see that that was it, that there was no other element around there that then would explain why we need to go back 23 feet and build a wall that's 5 feet higher. And people talked about no longer being able to interact with the Orioles bullpen, but only the visitors bullpen and some things like that. Because I just say this one last time, there was so much thought that went into every acre of that ballpark, every quarter acre, you name it, that went into that, that look, that's what people who step into those roles, general managers or team presidents or others, if you took over Fenway or Wrigley or Dodger Stadium, which has also gone through renovation, you have an obligation to really go back and say, okay, what's the history here and how do we respect that? If you look at Dodger Stadium, it's another great example of thoughtful thinking of a ballpark that's somewhat historic for baseball.
Best ballpark in baseball, as spoken by a guy who's been in them all. So there.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, so what they've done is with lots of care, and that's a big ballpark. That's not even a small one. So, look, keep an open mind. But I would say, like I said, don't throw those seats away because maybe someday someone wants to put them back in.
Well, and this will be the last word on this and whether they're going to play or not, right? And that's the real question, is where they are with their labor situation. And it's already ugly. It's going to get uglier. And I was kidding around with Dave Ginsberg about him getting off the beat just in time to not have spring training in Sarasota, because all that's going to get, you know, pushed away. But I guess the long play on this, and a guy like you being a little emotionally upset about it, or fans being like, what's going on here, is that they're screwing with the stadium at the end of whatever the Angelos era is. And most people are pretty well versed that these kids are not going to be allowed to own this team, that at some point other owners are going to take over 3, 4, 5 years from now with this situation. To your point, it can be undone in various ways, and it might be redone. There might be a redo of the redo at some point, but doing this at the end and thinking like who the next owners are going to be, it's a little, you know, for guys that don't show up, they sure have an impact. The Angelos boys, you know what I mean? They're running the team, every part of it. When the tickets go on sale, who the spot, like, but there's never a light shined on who's making the current decisions. It really is a very Willy Wonka sort of thing going on right now for a team that needs recruitment of people like me and you that want to buy tickets, quite frankly, whether we're pissed off or used to be pissed off or whatever, they need us back because we love baseball enough to talk about their wall all weekend on a football weekend.
I know, right? Yeah. Something is simple, but I'll just leave it with this. And that is, I know this from firsthand talking to people at, who we were working with and different things at the time. Several years ago, there were a couple of sponsorships that were presented, actually not just presented, but signed, that required certain outfield wall signage, colors, different things like that. I'm not going to go
talking about the Chick-fil-A cow. I remember that one. No. I've told that story.
Yeah, no, there was a couple other different ones on that. And Peter Angelo specifically, personally, had to view these, had to see them up close, and then he voided them. Simply said, I don't want that. Or I don't want that brand facing the fans. So there was a sponsorship deal done that would have allowed for that brand to face in, if you imagine like on the wall, whatever. And he said, no, it can stay, but it just can't face into the field.
It can't be a foreign car. Right. Exactly. Yeah.
No, it's on the flag court. No, it's on the flag court, and it's an alcoholic beer, alcoholic beverage. But point being is there was so much reluctance to not allow, you know, certain colors, certain sponsors to do that while Peter was large and in charge and aware of the franchise. This seems to be 180 degrees apart from that, which is tells you everything you need to know about, at least for me, that's my take on where the operation of the franchise looks, because I doubt, seriously doubt, that he would have said, yeah, let's do this. He probably would have deferred, tabled it to a later time or whatever it was to do it, or called. I can think of him calling two or three people that you and I both know for opinions on what to do.
Marty Conway is here. He's about to go there and down to Georgetown to be the good professor. You can follow him out on social media. I always appreciate your time. It's always fun. It's always educational. We always have a good back and forth. But I don't mean to bug you every 2 weeks when weird stuff happens. So I hope nothing really weird happens and we can just get back to like maybe having baseball conversations again in March or April or wherever it is. And I'm wondering if I'm going to make it to the Super Bowl, right? I mean, I've got my credential this and that radio. I don't even know around the corner, but times are a little weird, but I hope they open the stadium at some point and play baseball there so we can see what left field looks like.
Well, I would say this, you are going, if you want to, you're going to the Super Bowl, you're going to have Radio Row, you're going to have all that. And the simple reason is the NFL stops for nothing. They stop for nothing, Nestor. You know this, right? They bulldoze their way through. Look, that's not a knock against their, but they have the ability to push through things that other sports don't have to. And so they've made a commitment to this. You saw it Monday night. You saw it, the stadium. It's electric. It's unlike any other plant or facility in sports. They want to show this off in every way possible. So I think with whatever restrictions, masks or vaccines or whatever are going to be required, it's going to be the show in LA because they're not going to be denied.
I got my tray going on, man. I got the third one a week ago, rubbed it all out, and I'm cool now to hopefully get out to LA. Marty, thanks for the time, man. It's always great to visit with you. Thank you.
You're welcome, bud. Thank you. Good to be with you.
Marty Conway, maybe officiating somewhere near you, and certainly you can find him out on the social media thing. You can find me, hopefully, in the Maryland Crab Cake Tour with Marty and lots of friends getting into the spring, into the summer, all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. I got Raven scratch-off tickets I got to give away before they expire, so I got to get back out at some point and do that. Very appreciative of our friends at Liberty Pure as well, giving me fresh water and hot water and clean water, and they can do the same thing for you as well. I am Nestor. We are WNST AM 1570 Towson, Baltimore, continuing our wise conversations. We are BaltimorePositive.com.